Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Content Callout. This is Amanda, and I got my girl, Kayla Graham, here with me.
Hello.
So today, Kayla, we have an awesome influencer for us to talk with today, Shanae Alexander.
Yes, I'm really stoked to talk to her and get to the bottom of what an influencer actually does.
Yeah, so Shanae is an entrepreneur, lifestyle personality, writer, speaker, and wellness seeker based in Brooklyn, New York. So we're going to have a chance to talk to her today about all things influencer and social entrepreneurship. Hey, Shanae, how are you doing today?
How are any of us doing? Today, I will say I'm doing well. I've been chatting with people all day, and that is my love language is being able to hang out. So whether it's been via Zoom or not, it's still hanging out.
Well, thank you for joining us on the Content Callout today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. This is so fun. I get to hang out with two new friends.
Totally. So this is Kayla and I'm Amanda. So yes, we'll go dive straight right into it. So Kayla, you go ahead first.
Sure. So Shanae, I recognize you to be an influencer. And I'm wondering, how do we feel about that term influencer? Like, is it weird being called that?
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. Such a weird thing. I had a serious, like other serious job, not that influencing is not a serious job, but it's an interesting space to share a career with like 19-year-olds that like are in thongs. Like it's a weird... It's not like, okay, if you're like, I used to be a marketing director, right? And so it's like, I was a marketing director, other marketing directors, you have a similar shared experience or education level or kind of like history of just like how you got to what you do. Influencer, there's a lot of different types. And so I typically say, if I'm asked, I'll say I'm a content creator or social entrepreneur, but then people inevitably say, well, isn't that just influencer? And I'm like, sure it is. I am trying to be less prickly toward that term just because I think when done properly, influencer is the right term. And you are influencing people to live a lifestyle of whatever that is for whatever platform you have. For me, I don't want people to be me. I want people to be themselves and more of themselves and themselves to the highest percentage they can. So I am influencing them in some ways, but I do think that the term gets a little bit overused.
Do you remember the first time you were called that or that you knew that you were called that?
I didn't think I was that. And then people call me that like, oh, you're like an influencer. And I was like, no, I'm not. It's just because I wasn't that for so long and I never wanted to be that. I still don't know if I want to be that. So I don't remember the first time, but it always makes me flinch a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of like a weird connotation. Earlier, before we started recording, you were talking about having a 19-year-old assistant or 22-year-old assistant.
22, yeah.
Yes. And I kind of feel like that generation sort of wants to be an influencer.
Sure.
But my generation feels kind of like weird and cringy about it.
Yeah.
That's not true. I don't know.
You know what? I think it just never was a job. I mean, there have always been influencers, whether that was celebrities or sports figures or whatever, or writers or what have you. I think the word is just like much broader now. And so I've never been a person that was attracted to fame culture, but I am really attracted to community. And I'm really attracted to a lot of people that have a common interest coming together. So that's the part of it for me that really checks the box of like, oh, I love that we have so many people in a space that feel safe and then can share their opinions that have a community together. The part of it that I don't really care about is like the fame aspect of it. I don't care to really like be known in that way, but it comes with the job.
So let's talk about the job because I think there's a lot of misconceptions about what is a social entrepreneur and what is like, I mean, even as somebody like we work in marketing, obviously, and even as people who work in marketing or do social media, you get a lot of like, so what, you like post on Instagram and that's your job? And they don't see like what goes into all the behind the scenes work. Like we were talking on a different podcast about how like when people create a piece of content, there is thousands of hours that go behind that. Like we were talking offline how your boyfriend wrote your new theme song for your podcast, Press End Pod. And it's not like he just dropped it out of his head and was like, hey, babe, listen to something. Like it's hours of work.
Yeah.
So what's the biggest misconception about your job, you think?
I think the biggest misconception is that it is about the physical posting of a photo or a making of a story. And that's the part that people see as really fun. And not that the other parts of my job aren't fun. They're just a lot more like a normal person's job. So my day is typically a lot of emails, a lot of like contracts. I have a management team in LA that I work with. So they manage my deals and my sponsorships and any speaking engagements, anything like that. But that is every day we are touching base via email, via phone about different projects that we have. So I have two people in LA that handle me exclusively. And then I have an assistant here that I work with, but we work with photographers, graphic designers, video editors. And then I have a podcast team as well. So I have a producer and then we have people that help us record and sound engineer and all of that. So there's a lot of moving parts. And what is my job that I think a lot of people don't understand is my job is to be kind of the manager of all the pieces. So it's the manager, even of my management, it's being the connective glue that makes everyone feel motivated. And particularly for me, I want my team, the people that I work with, to feel really motivated and feel like they are part of something bigger. And it's not just Instagram posts. It's we have a message, we have a vision for what we want to say and what we stand for. And so getting all those people and those parts to work together to say one thing is a challenge. But then also there's a lot of like, am I allowed to say a bad word?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. There's a lot of boring shit that goes along with this, mm-hmm. to be honest. It's a lot of like back and forth and like per my last email and like a lot of that stuff. And then a big, big, big part of my job is talking to my audience. And so people don't realize I probably spend 3 hours a day answering DMs. I get over 300 DMs a day, and that's on like a normal day. And so I try to my best to answer all of them. And so answering people back, it's amazing what people will tell you in the DMs about their life, which I love. I love hearing about people's life, but people will tell me about their miscarriage or their breakup or their struggle with their body image. So it's a lot of emotional weight included in like the job, which I think is probably unique to most jobs. I don't think most people have to deal with kind of like that piece.
Well, yeah, okay. I think unless you're a social worker or a psychologist, yes. Right? Because if your brand, which your brand does rely on vulnerability and being genuine and being honest, then you're getting the reciprocal of that. But then that means you're taking on the emotional labor of people who are putting that on you.
Yeah. And obviously there's so many careers, a lot of any front facing career, I think you deal with some of that. Even if you like, I mean, I remember working as like a server in a restaurant when I was in college, and even that you get that integration with the people element to your job. And so I think what I was missing in my career before this was, of course I had coworkers and things like that, but now I really have an emotional connection to people that is part of the work.
So let's talk about that journey for a minute, because you've talked about before a couple mm-hmm. times now and now. So you were working in marketing, you're doing your thing. How did you start to do this?
Yeah, so I actually wanted to work in fashion my whole life. I interned at Nylon Magazine, decided like,
oh
just
my God,
wasn't,
I love Nylon.
I did too. And it was like in the heyday of Nylon when it was like the coolest, 2007, it was the coolest place to work. And as much as I enjoyed interning there, I did find that the fashion industry didn't feel fulfilling to me. It felt pretty like vapid. And it's almost like I saw this, how the sausage was made, and I didn't really love it. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, I don't think this is for me. And so I actually answered a Craigslist ad for a marketing coordinator, had no experience. He very clearly knew that when he interviewed me that I had no experience. He like looked at my resume. He's like, you don't have any like qualifications for this job. I'm like, I'm so aware of that. But I said, I really don't like failing. So if you give me a try for 3 months, if I fail at the job, I will find you someone new and like replace myself. And so I got the job. Don't know how. And he's like, I don't have anyone to train you. And I was like, well, I need a laptop and then I'll train myself. So I did. And I ended up actually staying there for 8 years. And at the end of my career there, I was a marketing director. And he one day kindly fired me and said, you're not supposed to work here. You're supposed to be an entrepreneur. I can't pay you what you're worth. And like, there's nowhere to go. I was at the top of the company. So there was really no potential for me. And that was the kick in the pants that I needed to then start an event planning company. So I started an event planning company, was an entrepreneur doing that. At the same time, I had done just a kind of like off chance phone interview a couple weeks before I'd gotten fired. And it was for doing social media and fitness at a fitness company. And I actually made my Instagram account for that interview because I, again, did not have any experience in social media. And so I created the Instagram account to show them I had some interest in fitness and social media. And I had 300 followers and they were like, unfortunately, that is not a thing. And so I did not get the job, but I kept posting on Instagram because I really love the community. Even the 300 people talking about like wellness, I just really liked it. So I kept doing that as I was building my event planning business. And then one day I realized I had 10,000 Instagram followers and I was like, what's going on? It didn't happen overnight, but I was so not focused on the numbers and the growth because I didn't care. I was too busy building another business. I wasn't focused on it. And when people ask me, like, how do I build a following? I always tell them, like, the best way to build a following is not to build a following. It's to, like, build your platform, your message, your brand. And that will come or it won't. But either way, the content should be something that you really like. And so at one point during my event planning business and my Instagram business, I started making about the same amount of money in both places. And I decided that staying up till 3 a.m. wasn't worth it working. So I stopped taking event planning clients and I focused completely on Instagram. And I now here I'm 5 years later.
That's a big leap. Yeah, that's wild. That's a big leap.
Yeah.
But also like how you were talking about how you have this team that goes through your contracts and sponsorships. That was you. Like you were an army of one when it started. Oh,
I was actually an army of 1.5 because I had a fake assistant named Davin Robertson and I made her a fake email and I would email people so I would sound more important. And so she would like be the hard ass that would negotiate my contracts, but it was truly just me. She also had an Instagram account that I made for her.
That is so smart though, because then you don't ever have to alienate people by being like, oh, you can have Devin be like, Shanae doesn't do that.
Exactly. Or it would be just so nice to have like some distance from like the scheduling. Even though it was me, it felt like I could put on my like assistant hat and like go to work and then go back to being a creative. But definitely, I always tell people to do that because first of all, like makes you appear as a bigger brand than you are. But then also it teaches you negotiating power because you kind of have a shield of not being yourself. And now I'm a fucking badass negotiator, mm-hmm. like as me. I don't have to pretend to be anyone else, but it taught me how to like cut my teeth in negotiation and saying what I want and what I don't want. And now I have the power to do that myself. I wish I would have had the power at the time to just be me and say what I was charging or whatever. But sometimes we have to take little baby steps to get to that place. But it taught me how to be a monster negotiator.
But listen, I'm picking up something else right now, which is another buzzword, kind of like influencer, from your story, which is the hustle mentality.
Oh my gosh, so yes.
I'm wondering, how do we feel about the hustle mentality?
I used to be one of those people that would probably have like some sort of sweatshirt that said like hustle hard or something like regretfully. So I truly just don't believe in that anymore. I subscribe to that so much. And I definitely think that we aren't all born with the same opportunities and the same like resources. And so some people do have to work harder because whether that's based on race or gender or whatever else, I do think some people have to work harder to get to the places that they want. But I do not ever like to tell people to be part of a hustle culture just because it leads to just a massive burnout. And it also centers work over like humanity. Mm-hmm. Like I think the interesting thing about quarantine and COVID has been that you see how much of people's identity is wrapped around busyness and work. And for a lot of people right now, they don't have work. If they're freelancing, their work slowed down, or a lot of people have lost their jobs. Like my partner lost his job. And you just realize how much we have idolized work and being busy and how much it really doesn't matter. At the end of the day, it can be taken away from us and then you're left with yourself.
So let's get off of that. So you also mentioned like when you first started that really this Instagram, it was for love. Like you were doing it for love of the community and you eventually monetized it. But I think a lot of people now, like when we talk about side hustles, because technically that was your side hustle at the time, is like they require require that side hustles be monetized based under this hustling mentality, that there's no love of just doing something just for doing it anymore. It's kind of like, even in like COVID times, you've heard people talking about like, oh, I learned how to knit, or oh, I crocheted, right, or I baked all this banana bread. And then it's like, oh, so you're going to start selling that now? And it's like, no, I did it for fun.
No, imagine having a hobby. truly, I think this is something that I hope that we're learning right now, is that it is okay to do things for the enjoyment of doing them. For example, every year I try to like learn a hobby or like learn something new or improve on something. And so I've always loved ceramics, but I joined a ceramic studio last year because I was like, I want to improve my ceramics. And what's funny is that so many people on Instagram were like, where can we buy it? I'm like, you can't. It's just for fun. All my shit sucks. You're not going to want to buy it. And I'm not trying to get good enough to sell it. I'm just enjoying myself. And I think that that is really gets lost sometimes. And if your side hustle or your hobby ends up making you money, that's another story. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think the fact that we feel like it is only worthy of doing if it produces something for us is like, I think that's a really toxic way to think about life. And it takes away just the pure joy of learning and doing. And I think inevitably people become so obsessed with monetizing, grading, all of that, they can't enjoy it because their success at doing the thing is based on others, not on their own pure enjoyment or kind of like the own energy that you have. Because like for me, sitting in a ceramic studio brings me energy. It centers me. I can release tension from my day, all of that. But if I was just concerned of making something good enough to sell, it would be a totally different experience.
100%. I think the second part of that toxic thing that people don't talk about is that, okay, so I'm a photographer. I'm out there taking photos for fun. I love doing this. Now I'm starting to sell it. I'm starting to take jobs. Well, now that's becoming work. So the joy that it was giving me before is now impacted by this stress that you were just saying, now I have to produce something to sell. So it's really great that you were able to take something you really enjoy doing it and still, let's face it, want to get up every day and do the same thing.
And I think the thing that for me that's helped me still enjoy that my hobby kind of became my work is that the end of the day, I care more about the craft of it, the doing it, than I do about what followers ensue or what numbers come with an income and things like that. Like at the end of the day, like if I wasn't getting paid for this job, I would still be doing it.
Yeah, which is really amazing. And it kind of seems like the things you do lead to other things, which is leading me to ask you about your book.
Yes.
So you're writing a book or you've written a book or where are you in the stage?
I have the concept for my book. I was wanting to devote this year to writing my book. And unfortunately, I don't know if a book written in 2020 is good. Like, I think it's one of those years that I don't want to make any media that lasts forever. And so I really actually had a really hard time with that because I was like, I felt selfish in delaying something that would be great for me and something I wanted to do. I felt selfish in delaying it because I was going through my own anxiety struggles with this year, as most of us are. But I didn't want to write a book about advice when I was sitting in anxiety. And I think that listening to myself and just saying, it's okay to take this year to survive, to think, to learn, and to be quiet. I mean, I'm still talking online, obviously. Can't shut me up sometimes, but I don't know. Like, to me, just like, yeah, I had the time to write a book, but do I want to write a book out of my headspace right this second? No, I want to feel hopeful and I want to feel like there is direction. And right now, I don't feel that. And so I never want to create out of a place of scarcity or like, I need to do this. I want to create out of a place of inspiration and desire. And so I'm writing a book, but I'm not writing a book.
You know what though? Something that you're saying is so key to me because as everybody who is involved in digital marketing knows, and social media knows, boundaries are hard. Turning off is hard. We have access to so much information all the time. And like, this is your job. So it's like you said, you don't want to be up at 3 a.m. answering DMs. So the fact that you recognize that boundary for yourself, I think that's huge. I think that's key.
I think for marketers like me and you guys or brands or people that are marketing a business, for me, the boundaries of saying no, not now, and also cutting people off from like how much access they have has been hugely helpful in maintaining my balance in this job. I mean, I know some people that have like no boundaries and they allow this work to consume them. And like on the weekends, I barely create content. Like I'm not videotaping everything I'm doing. When I'm spending time with my partner, I'm not like needing to chronicle every second. And I think that is the mistake that we get into, is that people won't like us if we're not doing our job 24/7. And unfortunately, I think the hard reality that we all have to learn is whether you're marketing for a brand or yourself or whatever, you don't matter that much. You're significant, but you're not special. And like, really, people don't care. Like, you'd be shocked to know that like you cannot post for a day and people really don't notice. Like, it's okay. I think that a thing has been really freeing for me is like, you're not that special. It's okay. Like, people will miss you if you're gone, for sure. And the people that love you, like in your life, of course, you matter to them. But like, just because you got back, yeah, and just because you didn't get back to someone's DM in 12 hours or whatever, or someone's email in 24, like the world doesn't burn. It's okay. This is not like, whenever I worked in like marketing PR, I would be like, it's like PR, not ER. And like, that's how I feel about my job now. It's like, I do not need to tell you about my moisturizer this second. We can talk about this in like couple days. Like, it's okay. So I think noticing that we are not special, but we are significant, has been an important thing for me to create boundaries of just like, we don't have to have access to each other all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a danger when someone has access to you all the time that it starts to impede on everything else that you do. So like you said, spending time with your partner, how quality is that time if you're on your phone talking right to all your fans and followers at that time, right?
Yeah.
So do you have advice for someone on how to set a boundary?
Yeah, I think for me, I'll give you examples from my life, is for my partner and I, when he's around, I will let him know if I need to be on my phone. Like, I'll say, hey, I need to get through a few of these DMs. I'm getting swamped right now. I just need to take 15 minutes and do this. I put time constraints on things. I also, like, when I'm out, sometimes I'll like take photos or videos, but like, I'm not there posting them at that moment. I'll delay content if I need to be stay present. But then some of the most important boundaries I've created are really with brands that I work with or people that I work with, of what I won't do, of just like, here are my values and my vision, and we don't impede on that ever. And so I would say in 1 year, I probably turned down over $100,000 worth of projects based on those things, whether this is a product that I don't endorse, a brand whose values don't align with mine, if they don't really value diversity in their company, things like that. So those are always like boundaries that I keep for myself professionally, of you do not have to take everything that you get for fear that you won't get another job. And that has actually strengthened my brand hugely. And then I have another set of boundaries with my community. So I will set boundaries very clearly. I have no problem saying that's not acceptable. Like, I'm a public person, but this is not a public forum where you get to say whatever you want. You don't. I'm sorry. This is a public forum that is moderated by me. And that's okay. Some people will clap back on that and say, like, you're a public person, you have to take whatever. And I'm like, I don't think so. I don't abide to that standard. And I can moderate my space however I want to. It's just like having a lock on your front door. There are people that come in and there are people that are not allowed in. And that's just the way it is. And so for me, I don't tolerate demeaning language. I don't tolerate people that are, to be honest, annoying. Like, you're just an annoying person and you just are here to like, you know, there's people that just like, they just want to troll. Well, actually, like the people are the worst ones. But like, I'm here for all opinions. And if you want to have a good conversation, if you don't agree with me, I'm totally cool with that. But I don't put up with internet bullshit. I really am swift to block people. I am really swift to delete comments, not if they are in disagreement with me, but if I find them to be harmful for other people in my community, mostly. Like, I just have no tolerance for like things about race. I have no tolerance for things about body shaming. I have no tolerance for things that really just can like hurt anyone watching or me. I mean, I have a thick skin because I've been doing this for a while, but certainly like, I don't create a negative space or allow that to be within this community at all.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Good for you. So yeah, let's go back to something you were saying. So you mentioned, and I think this is a different trend now, but you mentioned that you've always had a brand alignment on your values, which mm-hmm. is something that I think is becoming obviously more prevalent now with everything that's going on in the world, with pandemic, with BLM, with pride, all that stuff, right? So it's very interesting to me, and I think for all marketers, to watch how people rapidly shift certain ways. But it sounds like you've been doing this for 5 years. So you've been doing this for a while, where you always were aligning things with your brand, and not just with your brand, but with your values. So yeah. How do you make that hard decision about which brands you are or aren't going to work for?
I mean, obviously, like, I think there will be times I'll work with someone that people are like, don't you know the owner of that brand is in bed with this person? I'm like, no, I didn't know that. And I'm open to like learning about that stuff. I do think the majority of commerce is run by absolute assholes on some level. Let's just say that, like, I don't think most big companies, at least if you're working with big brands, can fully escape any of this. I think there's going to be someone, something that everyone touches. So the realistic view of like, okay, you can't hunt down every person at a company and see that their like political vision aligns with yours. But I will say this is, for example, like in the body image space, I don't work with anyone that carries like skinny products. So anything that relates to thinness as like a personality trait or anything like that, like I don't like anything. So like, for example, a company came in, wanted to work with me, and they didn't want to work with me on the skinny product, but I knew that that was part of their portfolio. And I'm like, unfortunately, this is like not something that I align with. For example, another time, there was a brand of bars called Think Thin Bars, and they were like my favorite granola bar or like protein bar. They tasted good, but I hated the name. And I remember going on Instagram and going, okay, I love these bars, but I hate this name and this branding sucks. And it's funny because the brand actually reached out to me like a week later, and they were like, actually, we just changed our branding. Now we're just Think. And I'm like, okay, great, cool. Like, I appreciate that you went from here to there. I appreciate progress. Same thing with like brands that haven't really had to confront like diversity and racism in their own kind of like company culture. I'm not going to cancel you because you haven't done a good job, but I'm going to hold you accountable to doing a good job. And that is like my job as a brand representative to people, is seeing who I'm working with and then going, okay, what are you going to do now? So what are you going to do in a year? And I, from my end, what I can do to be a good advocate and ally is mostly, especially in the realm of, I mean, like influencer work, it's based in like white supremacy for sure. I mean, it just is. That's just like something I have to like say, because at the end of the day, the biggest earners, the people that make the most money are white. Mm-hmm. Me being half Asian, but white presenting, I get part of that privilege to appear white or just be enough of something for brands to want to use me and like check an inclusivity box. She could be a lot of things. She could be Latin. She could be Asian. She could be mixed. We don't know. So for me, the way I've combated that with my job is to be able to go to brands and say, hey, I actually know like a really diverse group of people that you should work with. And like, who are you casting for campaigns? Let me make introductions to you. Let me connect you with 10 influencers who I know are amazing, who haven't gotten the opportunity to be in the industry as much as I have. I also like share rates with people of color that want to know what I'm making from brands, like happy to share that information and like help as much as I can to be transparent about what I make and how I'm being treated, and also provide them more access to the relationships that they may not hold kind of organically.
Yeah, I think it's so important to do that. As 2020 goes on, we learn more and more about things that we can do and how we can help. And I mean, one of the things you said that's been sticking with me that I think is really amazing is that you have turned things down and sometimes there's not a fit. So not that I want to name and shame or anything like that, but can you give an example of some of the times when there maybe wasn't a fit?
Yeah. Like I said, anything that's a weight loss oriented or kind of preferring a body type. Also brands that perhaps, if you look at their Instagram feed, you don't see much variance. There are also brands that are just on my like list of brands I don't want to work with. Mm-hmm. And my management holds those brands of like, hey, these are just people I don't align with. Like if I see a brand takes a lot of influencer trips, I mean, obviously not now, but before, and it's a bunch of like blonde white girls, and nothing against blonde white girls. Like my mom's a blonde white girl. I mean, I'm okay with that. There's nothing wrong with that. But if the brand doesn't value what I value, there's no point in working together unless a brand is saying, hey, we want your help in telling a better story. How can we do that? And like, can you help us do that? And can you introduce us to X, Y, and Z? Because we would like to be doing more of that. That I understand. Like, I understand that people change, growth happens. And unfortunately, things like diversity happen from the inside. You have to have a diverse staff to then be able to have diverse casting, diverse like freelancers, all of that. So this is a slow process, but I'm hoping that I can like push it from the inside. For example, like I'm a liberal. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. Like, I'm liberal. I come from a very conservative family from Texas, but I'm a liberal. And so, like, for example, I worked with SoulCycle for a long time, for years, and I love SoulCycle. I still love SoulCycle. I think that the people that work at SoulCycle, the instructors, like, their staff is wonderful, even their corporate staff. But higher up, there was a lot of news. I'm sure you guys know, I mean, you work in this world, that like one of the board members was like throwing a Trump fundraiser and that stuff. And at that moment, I was like, I'm not going to punish SoulCycle for this, but I don't need to advertise for them. I don't need to say that they're bad people. I don't need to condemn their business, but I don't have to be a representative for it. Like, that's the line. And I wrote a whole Instagram post about why I wasn't going to be working with SoulCycle anymore. And I made very clear that it had nothing to do with SoulCycle as an entity. It is that I want people to vote and to make financial decisions that are helpful to the people they want to support and maybe detrimental to the people who they don't. And so for me, like, I understand that people at big brands can have their own political views. That's fine. But to me, having your own political views and throwing an open fundraiser for someone that I don't agree with, values-wise, that to me is an outward statement of this is who I support. And so I don't want to be outwardly supporting you. So,
that's totally fair.
So that was an example of just like stepping away in a respectful way of saying, I think this business is fine. I think the people in this business are fine. Unfortunately, we're affected by other things. And so that was a pretty public example of me having to walk away. A lot of them are just like, yeah, some of it is just based on also like taste or if I don't like the thing. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's like, okay, I just don't like this. I don't like this product. Like skincare stuff is like one example. Like I've just tried things and I'm like, yeah, I don't like this. Like I don't feel comfortable recommending it to someone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's important too. What you said though is like, as a public figure, you don't have to cancel everybody. You don't have to tell everybody, hey, this is the worst. You're like, yeah, this is just not for me anymore. And I do think there is an important distinction there.
And for me, even with like products, sometimes I'll say on my stories, like, I didn't really love this, but I always manage to say like, if you love this, love it. Mm-hmm. Good for you. Like things are personal. That's why there's a lot of stuff in this world to choose from. And my opinion isn't more important than yours. It's just mine. And I happen to have a bigger megaphone.
So I want to ask you something. It's kind of unrelated, but if we look at marketing, so here's marketing, here's the timeline of marketing, and here's the first advertisement that ever went out. It was whatever it was. And now here we are where brands are using people like you, which is a relatively new thing. Mm-hmm. So what would be your advice to a brand? When should they engage someone like you? How far along should they be?
I don't think there's any rules for that, but I do think you're going to have to realize that you're going to have to pay people for what they're worth and pay people for their time. Because what I always tell people, if they have any issues with pricing, I say, well, number one, there's so many great people to work with online. Like, I'm sure you will find someone just as great as me at a price point that works for you. But I will say this, is people have rates for a reason. And my rate, and this is how we talk about rate within my team, is that you aren't paying me to post a picture on Instagram. You are paying me for all the time that I spend with my audience answering DMs about their divorce. You are paying me for every podcast episode that I may or may not monetize. You are paying for me talking about my life. You are paying for all the time that isn't the advertising, because that is the time where trust is built to be able to sell. And so at the end of the day, like, I don't shy away from saying I sell things. I sell things on the internet. That is part of my job. And there's no shame in it. There's no shame in selling things to people. As long as you have values that back it, you have some sort of barometer for quality, and that you aren't trying to only do that. Like, you're actually providing value outside of selling things. And that's where I think, like, people get wrong on what influencers to work with. Like, brands always look at the other ads Instagram people do. They're like, what are her advertising? No, look at what their not advertising looks like. Like, what does the other shit look like? Like, do they put heart into their content? Do they have a trust built with their community? Do people engage with them? So if you're a small brand, let's say you're a small brand, but you're like, I want to work with one person I feel really passionate about to be a spokesperson for our brand. See if they're worth what they're charging. Like, see it, read their stuff. Like, you can tell if you look at someone's post, like, are people like, cool, pretty? Or are people like actually giving a shit about what this person's talking about? It's not that hard to see what is like total shallow nonsense and what people actually care about. Are people asking for this person's advice on things?
Yeah.
So if you're going to be giving them money to dispense advice on something, you better be checking if their people want advice from them. And so for me, it's not about, I've had super small brands work with me where they're like, you're our first influencer campaign. Like, one of my most successful Instagram campaigns this year was with a brand. I'm obsessed with their stuff. They sell like wipes. They sell like body wipes. They sell all this different stuff. And I've always just loved their product. And actually, one of my Instagram followers, their family owns the brand. And they reached out to me and they were like, we're only working with one person, so we're going to work with you. And I was so motivated to make something with them because, number one, I love the product. Number two, I wanted to be great for them. If they're only going to do it on a small scale, like, let's do it. And so whether I'm working with a small brand, large brand, it's about finding someone whose voice is, first of all, in line with your company voice, but second of all, will they work for you? You're going to pay them, but you want to expect that they're going to work for you on the other side. I would say, like, if you're not prepared to pay a rate and you're trying to just like gift product, gifting is fine, but just don't expect a huge return. And also, big tip, if anyone out there is, if any brands that listen are wanting to gift and wanting to know a successful way to gift, asking influencers actually what they want from your site instead of just making them something
yeah,
like, is, oh, huge.
We have a lot of this, so
no, yeah, but you know, this. But a lot of people will say, oh, we're launching this thing, so we'll send them this thing. Mm-hmm. Or they'll just send a shitload of stuff that you don't want. And it ends up, it's a psychology thing, really. It's about giving people a chance to have an opinion about your brand. And when someone feels like they've chosen something rather than you just sent them something, you've already created this relationship where they're getting something that they want. Mm-hmm. And so the psychology of it is they're more prone to share. I know if, let's say if a clothing company says, there's a difference in a clothing company saying, we're going to send you some things. And hey, here's like our lookbook. You should go in and pick a few things that you really like. To me, it speaks to waste. To me, it speaks to like valuing my opinion and not just thinking that I want anything. But then also it builds this relationship of like, wow, that's thoughtful. Mm-hmm. You're thoughtful to me. And so I'm more willing to share if that's the case.
I would say that's fair.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, right? Because it's about a consideration. And then if you get an extra something that they're like, you know what, you chose these three things, but we thought you might really like this fourth thing.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And that's sweet, right?
Like, yeah, or yeah. Like with a lot of like makeup brands of them or skincare brands, a lot of them have started to just write an email before being like, we just want to make sure you actually want our latest launch and this is what it is. And we're happy to send it to you, but we just wanted to check in rather than just throw products at you. And that's helped a lot because for me, like everybody thinks getting free stuff is like the best part of being doing my job. And it's actually really stressful. I'm not crying like with a tiny violin here. I'm getting free expensive skincare. Like I'm not having like some sad parade for myself. I am saying though that especially if you live in a small apartment or something, that getting a lot of stuff isn't always like great. And I'm a one person with one face and only so many days in the year. And as much as I try to slather my boyfriend with products and have him also test them, we only have so much bandwidth. And so I think when a brand really considers that there's a relationship and we ask each other what feels comfortable, that is really great because it makes you also just feel like a human being and not like, here's stuff, take it.
I feel like we are getting close to being at the end of our time, but there is one thing that I really want to ask you before
ask
we start
anything.
To wrap up, which is that boss that fired you, what does he think of you now? Or she?
It was a man and he like absolutely so proud of me. He was like my biggest supporter. And whenever I started my event planning company, he hired me to do events for him. Like he was always such a champion of me. And I say fired and it is a firing, but it is the nicest firing that anyone could do. It's like a kick in the ass that I needed. And he is really proud of me.
That's amazing.
I bet.
Yeah. It's very cool.
All right. So my last question for you is, where do you think your social entrepreneurship or influencers are going to head on the rest of 2020 into 2021? What are you feeling for the future?
I'm not going to lie. Like business has been a lot slower this year. It's like the emotional part of my business is on the highest level it's ever been. And the work part of my business is on the slowest end it's ever been. I'm still like doing fine and my team's great and we're working on other things. But I definitely think everyone should just take a time to refocus on really what their mission is, what their value is. I think when you're not going at 120 miles an hour, you actually have a minute to refocus and realign yourself and to say, okay, what is it that I actually care about? And I think that's for influencers, marketers, brands alike. Is this is a really great time for some introspection. And for me, I'm also just personally like, man, you're never going to get a break like this again. So you better enjoy it. Like the feeling, and I think we all collectively feel this, unless obviously you have a job where you can like go to the office or to a store, wherever people work. But I one day woke up and I was like, man, I don't miss rushing. I don't miss rushing out of bed to do something. I don't miss rushing to public transit. I don't miss the feeling of always being halfway to something else. And I think that appreciating that and knowing that this is not forever and we might miss it a little bit, obviously not the turmoil and terribleness, but just taking a minute to appreciate the slowness of the time. And so that's what I'm doing with my brand and my team and me personally. And yeah, I think there's going to be a lot to learn from this time.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for being on the Content Collette today, Shanae. We really appreciate it. And all of your views on being a social entrepreneur and marketing as it is. Where can people find you? Let's tell them all about that and anything you're working on that you want to promote right now.
Sure. You can find me in all the things at Shanae Alexander. It's C-H-I-N-A-E Alexander. Don't find me on TikTok. I'm not very good. I'm turning 35 this month. TikTok feels like it's a ship that hath passed. But you can also find me on my podcast, Press Send Podcast. It's an advice-based show where we bring guests on or sometimes just me by myself. And we talk through advice questions from listeners.
Amazing. Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
Yes, this was so much fun.
Yes. This is almost like hanging out in person.
All right. That was a really great conversation with Shanae Alexander. I really loved that. You know, for so long, I feel kind of bad admitting this, but I just sort of thought that influencers would work with any brand or take any money. And it was just so incredible to learn about Shanae and her story and that she has so many rules, scruples, I don't know what you want to call it, about who she will work with. Great values. And I really love talking to her about that. Amanda, what were your thoughts on that conversation?
Yeah, you know, I think Shanae was really great. And I'd love for people in the marketing world to see the flip side of what actually like an influencer slash social entrepreneur, how they feel, how they choose to make the decisions. Because I think for often when we're the marketing professionals that we are, we think of it solely from our side. So I think this was a fascinating conversation to see the flip of it.
I completely agree. One more thing that she was saying, you know, and I think this is something that happens with social in general. You see the highlight reel, and she was talking about hours of emails, hours of answering DMs. And I just appreciated learning about that so much. Thank you to everyone for listening. We just want to thank all of our listeners out there, all the viewers. And if you want to leave us a comment, leave us a like, give us a little share, a little DM, we are totally all about that. So please do that.
All right. Have a good day, everybody.
Bye.